I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline. We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings. It's Farrell on the bench. I believe in whipped cream with everything. It's Farrell on the bench in the biggest way possible. Hanging out the bad seed, broken into bad, I'm with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad attitude, bad taste, bad log, bad dude, bad breath, bad attitude, bad vibes. We are live in the Magic City Studios in the Farrell Appalachian, right across the river through the woods from where Granny's about to go to bed, so she's snapping off hits of the Blue Diamond in New York City. The Big Apple. People dust a plastic bag to ready to drive it, some kind of fashion shake it up. Should do but all my friends that come around flat to flat to party up. Rats on the west side, bed bugs uptown. What a mess. This town's a tatter. My brain splattered all over Manhattan. Should do be shake out. Hey, what's gigging? I'm Farrell Carver. Hi, running it. And I have to tell you, that is just gigantic news tonight. Carver Hyde, that the Yankees sweep the Red Sox. They get the 2-0 win in the nightcap in the Bronx, boogie down style. Stanton and Voit with home runs. That was the difference. And Green closed the door. They win both, and they are now in the wild card spot. And they're only a half game behind the A's for the top wild card spot. Can you believe what this team has done basically since July 10th.
Yeah, it's wild. I actually just saw somebody tweet out the Yankees were 12 and a half games back of the Red Sox around the 4th of July, something like that. Like around July 4th, they were 12 and a half games back. And now after the sweep today, they have gone ahead of them in the loss column into the second wild card spot. What a day for them. They get that rally in the fifth inning in game one this afternoon. They're able to hold on with the bullpen. Tonight, they get the two homers. How about Wandy Peralta? I mean, he did the heavy lifting tonight. Louis Gil, too. Again, three starts now with the Yankees. Hasn't given up a run in any of them. Peralta comes in and gets big outs there in the sixth. Green finishes it off. All coming together for the Yankees right now. That's for sure.
I mean, your boy Johnny Lasagna with a big effort in the first game.
Johnny Lasagna, baby. Unbelievable. Who's been probably, you know, to be fair, he's probably been their best relief pitcher over the last couple of months. He still scares me in a really big spot, but he had a big spot today and he able to finish the job and throw two innings. So
yeah,
Yankees getting all
bases loaded.
Yes, that's true. See, he worries he had a big spot, but he got the job done. This guy Peralta has been great. That's the guy they got for the Sock Man from the Giants. Peralta's outstanding.
Is that how they got him?
Yeah, the Sock Man. They dealt the Sock Man to the Giants. That guy, Wandy Peralta, that's who they got in return.
Sock Man. So, you know, it's weird because I said around, you know, the All-Star break, whatever that was, I said, when was that? Like the 19th or something like that?
Right around there, yeah.
Something like that. I said they had to win every series the rest of the way to get the wild card. And they won every series except for the Red Sox series at Fenway. They won every single series, 2 or 3, 3 or 4, whatever. They won all of them. And that's how they did it. They won, you know, 80% of the games. That's just all there is to it. We welcome our radio affiliates, SiriusXM, Mightier 1090 in San Diego. It's their anniversary today, 1 year. Everybody's popping corks. And Sports Map, Sports Byline, Armed Forces Radio, Hoorah, Soldier, Hoorah. It's Pharrell on a bench with Carver High on a terrible towel Tuesday. And we're talking about the Yankees, whether you like it or not, that they have come back all the way and caught the Red Sox. Now, what's interesting is that the Rays are going to win that division, right?
Maybe.
And, well, I mean, I don't know, maybe. I guess you could say that there's the feasibility is there, I guess, that they could just keep rolling and then somehow, you know, win the division. They're five back, both of them, the Yankees and Red Sox. And then I told you what the wild card is. It's the A's by a half game over the Yankees, who are basically tied, but percentage points ahead of the Red Sox for the second wild card. If they started the playoffs today, the Yankees would be in. And they would play the A's. And of course, they'd beat the A's. And then,
well, they'll always, yeah. And we're gonna, later on, we'll have to talk about the Basset Hound tonight. Tough scene.
Well, we're going to talk about the Basset Hound, but the bottom line is this. If, let's say, you know, if you go back to the standings, Boston and the Yankees five back. So Tampa, to me, will win the division. I still believe they'll close it out and get it done because I do think they're the best team in the division. And can you imagine if Boston, after the way they played from April, May, June, July, I mean, essentially, right? And then now they're not only not in first, they're not in second, and they're not in a wild card. Can you even believe that? It's Pharrell on a bench. So the White Sox are pounding the A's tonight, 8-0 in the bottom of the sixth at south side of Chicago Progressive. All I know is Basset Hound, who's just been phenomenal for the A's this year in the conversation for Cy Young, even though he gets no respect. You can't deny what he's done. But he's been everything for the A's, if you ask me. It's crazy. But, you know, when I look at what he's accomplished, he's, you know, 12-3, and he's got a 3.06 ERA. People can say whatever they want. 24 starts, 16 quality starts. He's pitched over 150 innings. He's given up 51 earned runs, 15 homers, 35 walks, 153 strikeouts, 9 strikeouts per game. And then tonight, he took a line drive off his head in that game. 100-mile-an-hour heater right off the skull, Carver High. And they carried him off the field, right? So, but they're saying he's alert and he's conscious. And I don't know, I'm assuming that they took him to a hospital, or he's conscious and alert and at the hospital after being hit by the line drive. So that doesn't sound good. And it doesn't sound like, you know, he's going to be going out there this weekend or anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, really unfortunate injury. He took, you've seen it you know, if you've been watching baseball your whole life, you've seen it a bunch of times. Sometimes a guy, unfortunately, takes a screamer off the melon, and there's really nothing you could do about it. I mean, there's no – the reaction time just doesn't matter who you are. We've seen it happen. And, no, they're saying all the right things. He went to the hospital. He's alert. He's in good standing, all that. So, yeah, maybe not this weekend, but hopefully in the near future, we can get the Basset Hound back on the bump.
That kind of ruined their game tonight, I thought. I mean, you got him going. You got a good chance to win. That guy gets hit with a line drive, and they just died right then and there. The game was over.
That was it. So. End of the line for them. And look, that's the kind of thing that can rattle a team. You know, they'll tell you that it didn't. Afterwards, those guys will all get up there, Melvin, and they'll all say, yeah, you know, we got to keep going. We got to keep playing. You know that it affects some guys on the field. It always does. Any kind of major injury in any sport, it affects the team.
Can you believe that, honestly, that guy doesn't get any, no one talks about him besides us on Coast to Coast for the Cy Young. Horrible odds, everything else. How can you have that kind of record and numbers and stats, whatever, and not even get it's basically they've already gift-wrapped it, right? What they're trying to do is Lance Lynn's got it, and what they're trying to do is get Garrett Cole in the mix. But they don't even talk about this guy. That's embarrassing to me.
There's certain players, you know, look, if you play for the Oakland A's, you're not going to get the same recognition. And there's several franchises throughout baseball the same way. You know, you just don't get the juice because you don't play on one of the big teams. I think the Basset Hounds had just as good a year as Lynn or Garrett Cole, but he doesn't get the same splash.
I think he's been better than both of them. And it bothers me. And now he's taking this screamer off the skull, and now he's, you know, they're going to leave him right on the, you know, recliner.
The vacation list. Vacation list time for him.
Oh, God. It's just automatic. So, I don't know. I think it's unfortunate. You know what I really can't believe, to be honest with you? Once again, the Rockies are beating the Padres. I mean, you know what we're seeing here, and just so we're clear. Blackman grounded into a fielder's choice. Joe scored, made it 1-0 in the first. Marquez with a single to left. Diaz scored in the fourth. Rogers doubled to center. Marquez and scored 3-0 Rockies over the Padres at this point. And
well, did you see the splits for the Rockies this year? Like how ridiculous this is? They're 39-21 at home this year. They're almost 20 games over 500 at Coors Field. And then on the road, 14-45. That is insane. A split. I mean, you're talking 20 games over at home and 30 games under on the road. That is nuts.
So how about your boy Marquez pitching for them tonight and has the RBI, and they're up 3-0 on the Padres. Do you think that, like, you know, what you're seeing here, now they're not going to lose anything tonight because the Reds lost to the Cubs, but the Reds were within 1.5. If they were, you know, winners tonight and the Padres lost, it would have been a half-game lead for San Diego. You know, it's going to be the same as it was at the beginning of the day, basically, right?
Right.
So let's say, like, if they lost and the Reds won, do you think that it was over for the Padres in terms of that wild card, that it was, you know, inevitable that they were going to pass them and that the Padres have finally, the ice cream cone has melted?
No, I don't think so. There's way too much time left. There's way too much time left. I think that the Padres have the type of player in Tatis that can absolutely carry you for a couple of weeks when he gets going. So I think that this is going to be in there till the end. I think that now that the Reds have gotten, you know, kind of neck and neck with them, I think that they'll have themselves a good duel here all the way to the end.
You don't think it's crazy how they've failed and that they where they find themselves right now, that they're Like, I can't believe with as talented as a team as they are and how loaded they are. I mean, because they are. A couple things. I can't believe that they've blown it. Basically, they're right there on the doorstep of failure. And then I can't believe, in all honesty, that they actually thought as a team, as an organization, I'm serious, that the right move to make would be to sign Jake Arrieta. I mean, honestly, like...
It's like the Dodgers with Hamels. I mean, it's just...
What are you doing? The only thing that could top that move would be after Cole Hamels signed and got $1 million for not throwing one pitch, is if they went out and signed him as well now that he's on the 60-day IL and they signed him anyway. Because signing Jake Arrieta is akin to that. You can't even argue it.
I can't. I don't understand what you're thinking about. Like, I know you want, like, insurance if guys get hurt, but, like, you'd probably have better insurance, you know, by the guys with the guys selling shirts in the lot, you know, in the stadium than you would have an Arrieta pitch. It just doesn't make any sense to you. Guy's been awful, dreadful, embarrassing.
It has. He's just awful. He's finished. What more do you need to know? You heard me today on Coast to Coast. You're telling me that no one, not his agent, not his wife, not his best friend, not his shrink, not his doctor, not his prostate doctor, no one told him that he's finished. No one has the stones to tell him, bro, you're finished. Wrap it up, son. It's Terrell on the Bench. Terrell on the Bench, Rick Carlson, our sports business and legal insider from Harvard on Sports Grid, Coast to Coast, and Terrell on the Bench. He's up in Maine tonight. We had him on C2C today, and now he's waxing up on a mahogany. Rick, I got to ask you, first of all, about, because I never really had a chance today with timing and everything, to talk to you about the Bauer hearings in Los Angeles. And, I mean, just with your legal expertise, you have to give me an opinion on, like, how is it? Well, first of all, I have this sneaking suspicion, which is not good. I feel, you know, in an ugly way that he's going to get off. I feel like, A, he's got all the money in the world. B, which means he's got better lawyers. I don't care what anybody says, this Busby guy, it cannot dance with these other lawyers. If you ask me, maybe I'm crazy. And then, am I even thinking of the right guy? I can't keep track of all this stuff. I think Busby's the guy from the Watson case. But I'm talking about the lawyers that were in there today. This Holly, I think, is that represents Bauer, and then her lawyer. So my question is, you know, in regards to her testimony, and I don't know if you read it all from day one, but day two, she was basically grilled today by Bauer's attorney. And, you know, it just keeps coming back to the fact that she, you know, all this after the fact stuff of going to the hospital and the Pasadena police investigating for 3.5 months now and not coming to a conclusion is troubling to me. And also, he asked her, Holly, why she got back into bed with the guy after the traumatic experience of being choked nearly to death and then beaten and punched everywhere, including her privates and her face, her ribs, everything. And she said she wanted to remember the hours of emotional connection the two had before that happened to her. I didn't want to think about what just happened. I wanted to go back to the way it was before we had sex. The hearing is expected to continue over the next 2 days and include testimony from Bauer. We all know about his domestic violence and you know, basically paid leave. Holly said during her opening statement that the woman gave Bauer every indication she consented to the treatment she received during the nights they spent together at the home. They keep talking about consent, Rick. And I mean, the more I hear about it, the less I feel like she's going to win this thing.
Well, you know, listen, as a lawyer, I've read some, not all, but you know, you may like it or not, is a very important element of this crime and this hearing. On the other hand, I would disagree in the timing of this. You know, the Me Too generation has become really powerful, and I think some of the same stuff you might have heard 4 or 5 years ago will have different consequences today. So I can't pretend to get into the mind of a judge, and I can't pretend to get in the mind of court of public opinion, although I think the court of public opinion's already made its mind up. But I'm not really sure what the result is going to be, except the circumstances over the last couple of years have made it very difficult to justify this kind of behavior. I don't think it could ever be justified, but your question is, you know, does he get off? And I think it's a lot more difficult today than it was a few years ago.
Holly said during her opening statement that the woman gave Bauer every indication she consented to the treatment she received during the nights they spent together at his home. She questioned, under questioning from her attorney, the woman testified that the horror grew as bruises emerged after the pain surged the day after the second time she saw Bauer. The 27-year-old said she sent Bauer a picture of herself after returning to San Diego. I could not believe what my face looked like. I wanted to know him to know what he'd done to me. So Bauer replied in a text message, "Damn girl, are you okay?" She said she was frightened of the social consequences as the physical ones and was at first determined to tell no one else. "I knew how that was going to go. That situation paints me as a slut. I didn't want the story to go anywhere. But a visit with her best friend, who was mortified by how she looked, convinced her to seek medical help. She goes to the emergency room. Social workers there, her parents, Pasadena police. Today, she discussed the aftermath of the second visit in which she, according to her testimony, Bauer punched her in the face and private parts and left bruises on her gums, around her eyes, behind her ears. She was frightened at what Bauer might have done to her while she was unconscious. In text messages and a phone call she made to him for Pasadena police to record, he said that he only punched her in the buttocks during that time. She described the hours-long sexual assault exam, that she was terribly traumatic and physically painful, the entire thing. The nurse who took the stand and testified that she had never seen the kind of bruising she documented on and around the woman's privates in the approximately 75 exams that she's done for sexual assault. This stuff's unbelievable, Rick. It really is. It truly is unbelievable. But at one point, at something here, you know, you talk about going back a second time. You know what I mean? The first time it happened, and then you go home to San Diego, then you go back and do it again. I mean, I'm on her side. You know, I cannot stand this guy. I've called him a predator on the air repeatedly because that's exactly what he is. I don't even care if he's found not guilty of anything and gets off. He's still a predator, not only in my eyes, but I think in baseball's eyes and in baseball players' eyes and in the union's eyes and in the media's eyes and in public opinion's eyes. Would you disagree with that?
No, I wouldn't disagree with that. But I would also say that you know, the hearing is incredibly significant, and the standards that are applied are as well. But you know, the court of public opinion is pretty important in all of this, and you know, there's a lot of question about whether he would ever be a Dodger again, even if he does get off. Now, you know, people are entitled to the presumption of innocence, but then again, if you have something that is so compelling, it doesn't mean that a team, you know, has to reinstate you. So there are a lot of those issues floating around as well.
So let me ask you this question. Did you see the story of the kid, the ex-Pirate reliever, Felipe Vasquez, who is 30 years old? And I have to admit, let's just face facts, he was a really good closer. There's no questions asked about how good he was as a closer, even though he played for the lowly Pirates. But we know the story about him. He's going to federal prison for 2 years, and he was sentenced to 2 years behind bars for statutory sexual assault and child pornography, among other charges, in a case involving a girl who was 13 when he started sexually assaulting her. I guess my question here is simple. I said this on the air today. He's got a hell of a lawyer, because how do you sexually assault a 13-year-old when you're 28 at the time, he's 30 now, and get 2 years in federal prison? That's it. I mean, I want to know what kind of world we live in when you can sexually assault a child and you get 2 years. How good of a lawyer do you got? I mean, honestly, that lawyer, get that guy a load of money and get him a new office up on the top floor, because how do you get that guy off? I mean, that's essentially what he did. He got him off. 2 years, that's a gift-wrapped sentence.
Yeah, and listen, we can talk about, these are not isolated. These are very important. I don't mean to minimize them. And I'm also not going to accept it that every case totally depends on a particular lawyer who might be better than somebody else. You know, that guy did a really good job, and that doesn't mean that this guy, shouldn't get the book thrown at him. But then again, the standards are difficult to deal with. He'll he's not going to pitch again. Do you really think he has a chance when he comes back of anybody picking him up? And that's not enough punishment, but he probably doesn't have a whole lot of other employable skills either. So it's not that he's being punished enough, but, you know, there are a lot of other circumstances here.
Well, yeah, so what you're saying in Portuguese is his sentence will continue for the rest of his life because he's not going to pitch again,
right?
And he probably can't do anything else.
Right.
He probably made some decent money in his short time in baseball with the way these guys get paid nowadays, especially pitchers, and he was their best closer, so I know he made some good money over the couple years that he was in the bigs. He probably spent a million or two getting this mess dealt with, but I would agree with you that his life of hell, he'll be a sexual predator forever. I mean, you're tagged with that for life, so good luck getting a job when you got that on your resume. When we come back, we're going to talk to Rick Harrow. He's going to run to his hotel room bathroom and wash off after my first round of questioning. And then we're going to talk about Phil Mickelson's money that he's making. It's going to be worth over $1 billion for all in a minute. Talking to Rick Harrow, our sports business and legal insider. Tell me about Phil Mickelson being worth $1 billion now after the sale of 6 golf courses. What does he own? Tons of golf courses? I never knew that.
Well, it's $1 billion total, but he sold 3 private, 3 public. He has been working with Arsys Golf. They launched 2015, a significant investment from a company that has built a number of courses. For Mickelson, made with his business partner Steve Loy, could bring him in the vicinity of a billion. Now, the 51-year-old golf legend, $800 million in off-course earnings prior to this sale, and about $100 million on. That's not bad. That's pretty good. Obviously, he had a great year on the course, but he's had an even bigger year off.
I mean, that is just insanity. You're telling me that guy, because I love, his career has been pretty cool and everything. You're telling me that with everything that he's done in golf, he's made, now it'll be over $1 billion with these golf courses being sold. But you're telling me up to this point, he's made $800 million?
Yeah, and remember, again, about $800 million off, and that's over time with his endorsements, and about $94.8 million PGA career earnings, of course, majors. But that's a, you know, it's like one-tenth, as we said, one-ninth of his total earnings. So he's done okay for himself. No bake sale for Phil Mickelson.
Jesus, honest to God, what are we doing wrong? I mean, I guess it helps to be a three-time Masters winner, but can you believe, like, so imagine what, like, these golfers today, like Morikawa and et cetera. And you know what I mean? Like, let's say Koepka, DJ, and guys now at the top of the game, top of the heap. Can you imagine what kind of money they're going to make in 20 years? Because they're going to play for 20 years.
Yeah, but let's remember it's all relative, too. So, you know, if you added up Player, Palmer, and Nicklaus, the best three golfers at their time ever to play the game, you know, they're not in the top endorsement earning potential just because they made all their money in the 70s and 80s. And to some extent, you know, the Arnold Palmer estate and Jack Nicklaus with his endorsements comes to the present day. But yeah, the guys who we haven't even heard of who are going to win a lot of money 20 years from now, and that includes Tiger today, who's well above Phil, it's present value, and it's dollars. You know, you earn $2 today, and it's like earning 50 cents 15 years ago. So, again, it's all relative.
Well, I'll tell you what. Those guys never made this kind of money. They made good money then, but they never had anything like this. And it's almost like even in, frankly, in sports nowadays, today, like these NBA contracts for 4 years at $200 million like Embiid got today. I said this on the air. The guy, he plays 70% of the time. He misses 30% of the games every year, and he's never won anything, ever. And they gave him $200 million. And he's made way more than that because they owe him, I think, $63, $64 million, what's left on the deal as it stands now. And not only that, it's guaranteed. Look at KD's contract. Look at Trae Young's contract. Look at Doncic's contract. Look at Dak Prescott's contract. Look at today, Jamal Adams' contract. I mean, it really is relative to when you play. So, like, a kid now that's getting NIL, let's say this kid yours, imagine what he's going to be worth in 5 to 10 years from now. I mean, it's really all about what have you done for me lately? Because Jack Nicklaus never sniffed any money like this. And now these guys are making more money than God.
Yeah, two things about that. You're right. It's first, when they played, you know, Mike Schmidt's been a friend, and he always said, I wish it was born 20 years, 30 years later. But then the second piece is you have more opportunities today than ever before. The whole NIL thing, who'd ever thought it 5 years ago that a college kid's going to make $1 million? But also, you know, Ronaldo, let's take Ronaldo and Messi. So Ronaldo has 325 million Instagram followers. That means an opportunity to get significant dollars. And how about endorsements, the cryptocurrency endorsements, the gaming endorsements? Jack Nicklaus never had a chance, whether he would have done it or not, to have an opportunity to do any of these. So it's not just when you played, but the opportunities today are much different and bigger than they were those years.
Well, you're on Sports Grid a lot, and you're on, a lot of shows on the network, and then you're on a lot of, daily numbers game. You're on, you name it. Like, I'm surprised they haven't given you an NIL, like a Haro NIL or a Haro NFT. Even Carver High, what do you think? Like, I'm surprised that Oscar Mayer hasn't coming around or Vienna That's, Beef
yeah.
with the hot dog endorsements for Haro. What is going on here?
Yeah, but
something's wrong.
You know,
there should be an investigation.
I really appreciate your promotion of me. It means a lot to me. But I do think that in order to capture an endorsement, you got to understand what the hell you're talking about. And I admit, an NFT, cryptocurrency, I'm not invested in it. I have no idea how to make money in it. And so if I had a shot at an endorsement, it is now gone. Thanks anyway.
Do you think, like, today Carver High had the thought of the year? He said, how about a Pharrell Coast to Coast advertisement on Sidney Crosby sweater skating for the Penguins in 2022-23? The new NHL ads on the jerseys. What do you think? Pharrell Coast to Coast? I know they had a Sports Grid NASCAR racing vehicle that was tattooed with our logo. What about a Pharrell C2C logo on Sidney Crosby?
I like the idea. Would you put it on a non-Penguin?
I would, no.
Good for you. You took too long to answer that, by the way, but you gave the right answer,
well,
even
I was
though
thinking,
I'd have been
I was
a little
thinking,
happy
would I give,
you did it in 10 seconds.
I was thinking, would I give Carver High, like one of his Islanders, a coast-to-coast? And I was thinking maybe Matt Martin, but at the end of the day, I don't like him either. I used to like him. We used to be friends, but he's beaten the Penguins so many times now, I don't like him anymore either. I used to like him.
You might as well root for the team you want to root for.
Scampi, too. He could have had Carver High. Don't you think Detlef Schrempf Scampi could have had like a Gordon's Fisherman type advertisement going?
Probably. Something along those lines. Why not?
Yeah. You know what?
How about
do you think
Josh
the people
Bailey?
Who are listening to us remember Detlef Schrempf? I think that's a great name from the past, but I'm not sure most of the people who listen have the foggiest idea.
Okay, so what about Josh Bailey's Bailey Banks and Biddle or Bailey's Irish Cream? What do you think, Carver High?
I think that there's a lot of opportunities here. I don't know, though, if for the NHL it's going to be on a per-man basis. I think the entire team has to wear the same company, I think. I don't think we can go guy by guy.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I
by the way, let me ask you this. Who is the easiest the last 30 years, I know this is tough, the easiest laydown in the history of endorsement names? I think it's Howard Johnson. Don't you?
You mean in terms of, you know.
Yeah, just go to the bank right away. I mean, you know, send them over to the hotel chain. I don't care how much you pay me. I'm the only guy that can do it for you, so let's do it.
Yeah, but that guy haunted me, too, as a child. He hit a lot of home runs against the Pirates. I mean, to tell you.
Yeah, well, a lot of people did. Yeah, he was a good ball player in his day, don't you think?
Well, let me ask you a question, lastly, about Osaka. She had another, you know, let's just call it what it is. She had another moment having a press conference where they've blamed a reporter from Cincinnati. They've called him everything, a bully, everything else, because he asked her, I thought, frankly, I got to be honest, I thought he asked her a straight-up question, and it was just legit. There was nothing bullyish about it. I did not feel at all that he was interrogating her for her mental health status. He's just like, you know, this platform that you're on to save the world, it certainly helps having the media do all the reporting for you. And then he said, why is it that you can't deal with us? And then she got up and started crying again and left the room, and that was the end of that. And they treat her now like a two-year-old, the tennis, whatever you want to call them, the professional tennis, whatever, you know, WTA, whatever the hell they call it. Rick, I don't even know. You're the one that follows it. All I know is, and I don't mean that disparagingly. I mean it as I don't follow women's tennis except in the slams, and I don't care about, you know, I got to be honest. She makes tons of money. She's the number one player in the world. She's doing great things, donating money for Haitian earthquake and you know,
right,
people dying. I commend that completely. I applaud her. But this whole act of, I can't do interviews and I can't deal with the media, I'm just, it doesn't hold any water with me. You cannot be the number one player in the world and now have this, I can't do interviews because I have mental health issues. It's not holding water for me. You cannot, you know what she should do is quit playing tennis. If she can't handle it, then stop playing tennis. I'm not nice. If you're making hundreds of millions of dollars, do the effing interview, and if you don't like it, leave after 10 minutes, but you got to do it. That's part of the gig. In all of pro sports, it's part of the gig, whether you like it or not.
Well, in this day and age, there is not an obligation, but an opportunity for her enablers to make things easier for her. And if they are, then it's unequal treatment versus others who are in the same situation. Like I was thinking today, give her some of the questions beforehand so she can start thinking about them. But on the other hand, you know, you need some spontaneity. She wants to have her known as the person who gave significant money to Haitian earthquake relief, not necessarily whether she plays well this week or not. And sometimes you're right. You can't have all the questions asked the way you want them to. And I don't know if the answer is step away. But by the way, we may see that.
Let me ask you this real quick. I got 20 seconds. Do you think that the guy was being a bully to her?
I didn't see it, but I heard about it. And I think it was a legitimate question. Again, it might have been tone. It might have been circumstance. But you got to be able to have somebody ask those questions to give her an opportunity to reflect on it or not, but you can't avoid it. You're right.
All right, let me just tell you. You're right. I got 2 seconds. It was not a bully question. He just asked a straight-up question, and he wasn't even a jerk about it. And the whole thing has been blown up and ridiculous. I'll see you, Rick. Listen, I've been around a lot of that depression stuff in family, friends, colleagues. Carver High, you know it. You were around it. So you saw it firsthand. And it's scary stuff. I don't disagree with that. I feel horrible for the chick. I'm not against her. I'm not out to get her. I'm really not. It's just simple for me. Like, this whole act of, like, we're supposed to attack this guy now because he asked her a straight-up question, and that people are showing his face on TV like he's some kind of rapist because he asked her a tough question. It wasn't even tough. It wasn't even tough. I watched it. It was nothing. It was like a softball question. And she got all bent out of shape and crying and got up and left, and they shut the whole thing down for that. I mean, I thought it was a joke. Like, I'm like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, they treat this girl like she's a 2-year-old. Like, honestly, like she's a baby. Like, that's what they treat her like.
The moderator at one point, and I was listening, she's like, do you want us to stop? Is it okay if we, you know, do you want to stop here? And she's like, no, you know, like the moderator's even, it was just, it's very weird and very tough to take at times. You're right.
How uncomfortable is it? Like I'm watching it, and I'm going, is this happening? Like, I've never seen this before where they treat someone like this. And like, you don't see it with anyone else. Have you ever noticed that? It's like, she's the number one player in the world, so she's getting the special treatment, but nobody else gets it. I don't get it, you know? I mean, if it's all so overwhelming for her, I think she should just walk away from the sport. Seriously, just go live life. Figure it out. Get better. Get healthy. Take care of yourself. The tennis thing's a little overwhelming for her, apparently, in press conferences.